You're listening to KXL in the Morning. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead. It's time for the latest from New Hampshire government news with our friends at the New Hampshire Bulletin. Get more of their articles at newhampshirebulletin.com. They join KXL in the Morning every Friday. This week I'm joined by senior reporter Anne Marie Timmons. Welcome back.
Thanks. Great to be here.
I want to also give a quick thanks to Kat Martinez. She's been filling in for WKXL in the Morning Tuesday through Friday this week. I was supposed to be on a trip to California that did not come to fruition. So here I am in New Hampshire doing this segment. So big thanks to Kat. And definitely check out the shows that she produces here in WKXL. So it's been a crazy week in the New Hampshire legislature. So we'll be discussing that. But let's start off with you went to Dartmouth Hitchcock Hospital to talk about the non-COVID patient situation. We've been focusing a lot on the COVID situation the last couple months because the numbers have been so high, but there's other people that are needing medical services.
Right. It was tough to see the healthcare workers could hear just the anguish in their voices. So people are not able to get in for heart attacks, for strokes, management of chronic disease like diabetes. And they are getting calls at Dartmouth from as far away as South Dakota and Florida to see if they can take any of their patients. And they said, we can't even take care of our own patients. So in some cases, people are not getting the help they need, they said, and being transferred to a hospital that has some care for their special needs, but not enough, and they're dying. One doctor talked about a patient losing a leg because the diabetes was not able to be managed all along. And I think what's frustrating for them is these are people who, in their words, did the right thing, got vaccinated, got boosted, wore masks, and they're paying the price of folks who haven't done that. And the ICUs remain full, and they remain full of people who are not vaccinated. One thing we learned this week is the state reports out a number of people hospitalized each day, and right now it's around 380. What we learned this week was that there's another count of people who are in the hospital for COVID but are no longer infectious, so they are not counted in that. So that brought, if you add those people in, that brought the count of hospitalizations up early this week to 509 people. And the reason that's important, because that's another, 130 plus beds that are taken that aren't available for these other people. Because when you go in for COVID, if you do make it out of the ICU, you are there for a long time, weeks and weeks, and you're no longer infectious. So under the state's definition that they have to follow, you're not counted. So the problem is even bigger than sort of realized initially.
Yeah, and how much across the state are they finding that the hospitals are really overloaded? I mean, is it kind of ubiquitous across the state? It seems like Manchester, the Catholic Medical Center, and Dartmouth are really getting hit hard, but is it across the board?
It really is. It's everywhere you call, they're experiencing the exact same thing. Medical offices too, mental health providers, substance abuse providers, all of them. So we cannot take care of the number of people that we need to. I talked to some mental health counselors this week, and they said, we've tried so hard to reduce the stigma and tell people to come, that we're here. We get that message through, they're coming, and now we can't treat them either. So it's across all, physical and mental struggles, and it's across all kinds of providers and across the state.
When it comes to the non-COVID patients that are going to the hospitals, is it an issue where just the hospital itself is so overwhelmed? It's like, obviously, there's these specialized departments throughout the hospital. I'm assuming most of them are going to be pulling shifts in the emergency room necessarily. So some hospitals probably are going to be doing that. But is it just the resources at the hospital don't exist for them to get patients to them that is really causing the backlog for them?
It's a couple of things. Wentworth Douglas at one point told the ambulances bringing folks in, don't even come into the parking lot because we just can't even work with you at all. There's just no resources and no room. There's no staff. and they're left to, you know, in the doctor's words, drive up and down 95 until they find someone who can take these people. So there's a back end problem where people who are in the hospital who are well enough to be discharged, but need to go to a nursing home or a rehab center, there's no room there, so they can't get out. There's a workforce shortage. People are now getting sick with the new variant, so they have to stay home. That's exacerbated it. And so there's no people even to do the non-medical care things, you know, the administrative things or work and dining. So every aspect of healthcare is really strapped right now. So it's room and it's resources and it's people.
Yeah, and there's a lot of workers that they're just burned out and decided it's like, I'm going to change fields at this point. Like this is, it's obvious COVID's going to be a problem across the country for, I mean, at least the next 3 to 6 months. So, fingers crossed here, Omicron's going to help burn out the situation, but it's going to be a rough few months in the interim, unfortunately. I mean, are they speaking, or do they see like a light at the end of the tunnel with any time frame at all? Or is it just kind of seat of the pants right now?
They are, I think they have maybe given up on seeing the light because they've been here so many times. One doctor told me she remembered when the vaccine became available and she said, this is going to be the turning point. And it wasn't. And then we had Delta and we were doing better. And that seemed like the end or the start of the end, and it wasn't. So I think that this moving finish line has just become so difficult that they're focusing really day to day to get through the day. And you mentioned the exhaustion. There's also, they talked to me about moral distress, which is, we know the a patient needs this level of care, but we can only give them this lower level of care. And that's every day, multiple patients. So, right, we keep hearing healthcare people are leaving because they've been mandated to get a vaccine. And again, I've been told that, yes, some do leave for that reason, but it's a small number. People are leaving for the reason you cited. They're just wiped out.
Get vaccinated if you can, for sure. Lose weight if you're obese. That seems to be a huge contributing factor at this point. Even the CDC, I believe it was, came out this past week with a report supporting that. Many people have been saying that for months, but finally the mainstream government agencies are supporting that. Take better care of yourself because it's going to really make life easier. So even if you're again, if you have an issue with the vaccine and you don't feel comfortable with it, just take better care of yourself. It's going to help get you through flu season. It'll definitely help you get through this. Let's move over to the legislature, which has been just a flurry of stuff. I follow all you New Hampshire Bulletin crew on Twitter, and it's just a constant stream through the last couple of days of everything going on. I'd love to start with the dental benefits for Medicaid participants. That's a really unique situation.
It is. It's not one I really appreciated till I tuned in last session for the big finance public hearing that went on for 9 hours. And dental benefits was one of the most frequently mentioned things. It wasn't divisive concepts, although that was up there. It was dental benefits. And so adults in this state who are on Medicaid or expanded Medicaid, there's about 85,000 of them. They do not have the preventative care that most people take for granted. So cleanings, x-rays, things like that. Their care only covers the emergency, like the tooth extraction. None of the care that would prevent that tooth extraction. So there's been a bill for a long time. There's bipartisan support to provide them preventative dental benefits. And the federal government picks up a big part of it. They pick up half the cost for regular Medicaid and 90% of the cost for expanded Medicaid. So the cost to the state is quite a bit less than the total cost. It's $3 to $7 million. I've seen estimates and
to drop in the bucket when you're looking at the budget.
It's kind of tiny money. And so each year it gets a little bit closer and then it fails. And last year it failed literally in the 11th minute of the 11th hour in a flash. And it was hard to even see what happened. So it did pass the House today. It was an effort to table it, but they overrode that. They did pass it. It now heads to House Finance. You know, it's made some steps before. So they're, cautiously optimistic that it will get through this time. Right now, New Hampshire is one of 10 states that handle dental benefits this way for Medicaid recipients. So that moved forward today.
Yeah, budget hawks, so definitely keep in mind if you don't keep track of your teeth as you go, especially I'd imagine a lot of the Medicaid participants are not necessarily in situations where they can maybe take the best care of themselves overall. To give them preventative care for that, just like regular preventative medicine when it comes to the rest of your body, is going to be a huge money saver down the road.
We heard two representatives today call this an entitlement program, which you can imagine the groans on the House floor. Yeah. That was upsetting. And someone said, this is not a hand up to the greedy. It's really a humane support for the needy. And I think that is how most people see it, that this is a population that if they're not in need of this, you know, and especially vulnerable, then I'm not sure who would be. So I see it moving forward. We'll see what happens. So far, at least took a step forward today.
And we're only like one of 10 states, I believe I read.
Yeah, one of 10 states. So maybe we'll become one of whatever the math is of the rest.
Yeah, so hopefully they can figure that out. Moving on to, there was something about ultrasounds and abortions.
Yes, today, so as we know, the state's new abortion ban on abortions after 24 weeks went into effect January 1st. Part of that includes a mandatory ultrasound for all abortions at any stage. There is some disagreement about how the law reads, but that's generally interpretation. And so there's been pushback about that. You know, do we really need an ultrasound with the development in medicine at an early stage in pregnancy to get the information we need? Some will say no. Shouldn't that be a decision made between the doctor, who's an expert in this, and the patient? So there's been pushback on the ultrasound piece. The whole bill has, you know, angered many people, as you can imagine. But this ultrasound piece, there was the focus of this amendment today. It has the governor's support, but it was an amendment passed in September by a committee to, you know, they took one bill, rewrote it to be an repeal of the ultrasound piece. It came up today and the House leadership got it tabled because said that there was too many last minute questions about this amendment bill, and, you know, supporters reminded them that it was passed in September. So it's not quite last minute, but that did get tabled today. We'll see where it goes. I have heard there is support among Republicans for removing the ultrasound or scaling it back in some way. So we'll see where that heads. You know, it'll be one of a few abortion pieces of abortion legislation this session. We have a repeal altogether of the ban. We have a Texas-like abortion ban coming up. So it'll be an ongoing topic. Sure.
Yeah, definitely. And this is also kind of a normal thing when it comes to larger legislations in the state where a big bill will go through, it'll get passed, and then over time it'll get tweaked as it goes. And I had a discussion last week with Professor Buzz Scher of UNH Franklin Pierce and Ross of Americans for Prosperity last week about the bail legislation that was also discussed this week, which we can touch on the result in a second. But this is something like every year they're going back and making changes to bail reform in the state and how exactly cash bail is handled. And this definitely will be happening with the abortion subject in the state. And it seems like the ultrasound piece is politically an easy thing for the Republicans to give and say, hey, we're not all bad. We're trying to meet you halfway here because we do have this ethical obligation to restrict abortions to some extent, at least, but yeah, we'll meet you on this.
Right. I think that's right. They see it as a piece that they can compromise on. And there are 900 bills plus coming forward, and any of those can morph into something else. So we don't even really know yet what we'll see in terms of abortion legislation coming down the road, I think.
Yeah, follow up to the bail reform legislation. That was SB 92 that was up this week, and it was actually tabled. So that to anyone that was interested in that and is listening to the New England take, that subject is now set aside for now and things are going to stay as is. I guess procedurally, could you tell me what the difference is between something being tabled and something just being tossed out?
I can try. At the office today, we were saying this should be a board game. Like, if it goes this route, if then, what would you do? So a table is not killing it. It literally puts it aside. One thing we heard today, there's a snowstorm coming on Friday. There were too many bills to get through between Wednesday and Friday of this week, which is their first time back. And so they put aside what might be controversial or might have a lot of questions attached to it so they could get through what they could the next 2 days. So those bills are tabled. They'll have to bring them back up before crossover day, which is when House bills go to the Senate, Senate bills come to the House. And because after that, if they haven't resolved it in their own chamber, it'll take a much larger majority to get it passed. So there is an incentive to get it done by, I think it's February 3rd or somewhere around there. So there is a deadline, but it's, you know, Friday was the deadline they were talking about today.
So if it's tabled, it could come back this same session in theory.
Yes, I would count on these coming back.
So a very explosive thing in the Twitter sphere the last couple of days has been employer-based COVID mandates being up for discussion. And this is a lot messier just on the Republican side of the House.
It really is. So we know we have the federal mandate that requires larger employers of 100 or more to mandate vaccines or offer testing. Hospitals also have to mandate vaccines. What this bill would have said is nobody could, as a private employer, could mandate vaccines, even if you are a small employer and it's your own business. You can't do that. So that bill did come up today. There's a number of bills that try to chip away at these vaccines.
Yeah, there was all sorts of them. I was reading through. I'm like, this is kind of the same as this, and this kind of specifies this little piece. It's like, oh my God.
The Post-it notes on my desk are already out of control. We're at day two. So they tabled that today. This mass of legislation actually prompted this week a number of organizations to come together. All the hospitals, the Business Industry Association, which represents 400 members of businesses in the state, a lot of art performing centers and other private business owners have come together to form the Healthy 603 Coalition. And their focus is going to be on COVID-related health measures and supporting bills that they feel protect the public health. And it's around vaccine mandates. And it's also to protect the right of business to make decisions. You know, the debate here is whose liberty is more important, the employer to decide what he wants to do with his employees or the employee who's being told to get a vaccine mandate. And even with a mandate, you're required to offer an accommodation. So if you want to not get vaccinated because of medical religious reasons, you could then maybe mask at work all the time or work remotely. So there is some room there. And I think some employees are willing to do that and then some don't want to do that. So I am looking into how many people have left their jobs over COVID mandates. So stay tuned on that.
Yeah, it seems a lot of anecdotal one side or the other information on it. And it's because they're small companies, they're not necessarily going to have a lot of data to report and nowhere to necessarily report. And they definitely probably don't want to promote that things happened.
Right. I know it'll what I've gotten so far has been surprising. So I'll leave it at that.
Sounds good. I'm excited to follow up on that. Yeah. Because I mean, from the Libertarian Party perspective, I could totally see them being torn on this because an individual owns their small business. They should have the decision to who they want to work with or not work with, who they want for clients and who they don't want for clients. But on the other side, the individual liberty side is usually what they're supporting. It's really messy politically.
It is. They are very much about it's your body. You will have your, it should be your choice to vaccinate. Now, I think it's not too hard to extend that to a question. Where does that leave you on abortion? And yeah. What's interesting is that for them,
The libertarians are torn on abortion. It's shocking how that
they're
works.
torn. It is. It's very, very different. Mostly we have heard, you know, them say, well, when I ask about this, they'll say, well, this, I'm talking about COVID. I said, I realize that. I'm talking about the concept. And they're like, I don't understand why you're asking about abortion. This is about COVID. Sort of like we're talking over each other's heads. So it is interesting. I will say that.
Senior reporter Anne-Marie Timmons of the New Hampshire Bulletin, thanks for joining me.
Oh, always great. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to WKXL in the Morning. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead.